Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia, points north, south, east, and west. And let me tell you something. For the first time since 1996, the Washington Commanders are 7-2. Brian, we talked about this last night. You and I were in the tunnel. The players come running in. Nothing's ever easy in the NFL. I don't want to say something was easy. It was a one-score game late. The Washington was firmly in control.
Totally.
85% of that game.
Yep.
It was 21-7 at halftime. Late in the game, like 5 minutes left in the fourth, it was 27-16. They were able to get the late touchdown. When is the last time a burgundy and gold team, regardless of the damn name, whatever they were called, went up to New York and just had a relatively simple road win?
It's been a while.
It doesn't happen.
It's been a while. But, like, you know, but like what I tell you about the end of that game, and I understand everybody does it, as a dude that has been on that side of it, when somebody kneels on your one-yard line, that has to be more demoralizing than them actually scoring. It's like, we're going to let y'all off easy today. You know, and I understand the, what they call it, sportsmanship and all that. Sometimes, like, just score the damn points. It's all grown people on the field. You know, and I'm not knocking anything. I'm just saying, when a person drives straight down the field on you that easy and kneel down inside your five, it's like saying, oh, we let you off the hook a little bit today.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the plays that really kind of secured and sealed everything.
Case. That pass,
the 42-yarder to OZ, totally. I think that pass, that throw and catch, 42 yards to OZ, takes him to the two-minute warning. The ball game's pretty much over. That's when I came downstairs from the press box. But there's a play even earlier that I thought just really, really showed what this win was all about. It was 3rd and 9. And generally on 3rd and 9, you're kind of cooked. Like, very rarely are you picking the 3rd and 9 up.
Yeah.
And it was in their own territory from their own 36. They line up in the shotgun. They're kind of going fast at this point. And Jaden has to buy a bunch of time. He finally – did you notice how many slow-developing, shallow crosses and drags they were running?
Mm-hmm.
They believed in their offensive line in this game.
Totally.
And I think that became clear throughout. But 3rd and 9 late, he hits Eckler on the check down. But Eckler had to make a move to get the first down. Eckler does. So I want to say it was like a 6-yard gain. Eckler's able to slip by a backer and then finds open space. 28-yard gain. That, to me, was really the game.
Yeah.
Because then you end up with 1st and 10 on the Giants' half of the field. And it just they went on to kick the field goal. They got down to the 5 or 3-yard line, weren't able to punch it in. But I think every time they needed to, they responded.
They did.
Every time.
But I also go to a play, and I don't know if anybody really caught it. I don't know what the lady referee was looking at, but he didn't get the first down.
The neighbor's spot? Neighbors, I was with you then. You
neighbors caught his hand. He caught the ball here. Which was
B's screaming challenge that before
it was a yard,
tackle.
It was a yard short. He caught the ball a yard short, never gained any more yards. And she tried to rush it in. If they would have challenged it, you would have seen the ball never crossed the line. Never got to the line.
It ended up not mattering.
Yeah.
I think with what Washington has now, 7-2, first time since 96, the Eagles are right there. The Eagles aren't going away. Yeah. They seem to have kind of outrun the storm. Saquon looks great. The next two games now, dude, the battle of Pennsylvania over these next 2 weeks, hosting the Steelers and then going to Philly on a short week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are two no-joke games.
You're not lying about that.
But, I mean, Washington, Detroit has kind of cemented itself as the best team in the NFC, I think both record-wise and just eye test-wise. Detroit has a plus 110 point differential, which is quite good. Washington at 7-2 has the next best record. They also have the next best point differential. So that, to me, this ain't fluky. Like, there's no accidents happening here. I thought
we would talk. The coaching matters, and I was talking with Tanner yesterday. You look at this overall team; everything has gotten better. You know, it's not just one person, and I don't think anyone. We're not trying to present that. That what the haters think we're trying to present. But the ultimate thing is, every aspect of this team has gotten better. The way they adjust, the way they respond, the offense, the defense, special teams, everything seems better. And I think you have to give a lot of credit to Dan. You get credit with Adam first, Dan, and then the coaches leading the way. The old coordinator, D coordinator, and Cliff, and also and Joe. Those, every one of those guys, and I watched those guys coming off the field. The coaches that, you know, you got assistant coaches, you got the assistants to the assistants. All the way down to that, those dudes are super proud when their schemes and the things they work on all week, when they go out there and it works. They're putting the work in, man.
I totally agree. Specifically, I think there's a assistant coach that deserves a lot of credit from yesterday. And I saw him walking around pregame, and I don't know that coach, like, for most coaches, their life is pretty volatile. Like, most assistant coaches only last five years in one location, and you move around a lot. And it's difficult because these guys have families and they're always on the move, and that's part of life, right? But Bobby Johnson last year in New York. So Bobby Johnson came with Brian Daboll from Buffalo to New York to take over that O-line coach. And I'm not sure folks recognize how big of a role O-line coaches usually have in NFL locker rooms, and particularly on offenses. Now, the Washington staff is kind of different because you've got an OC, you've got a run game coordinator, you've got a pass game coordinator, you got a lot going on. In previous iterations, kind of your O-line coach was also your run game coordinator. Uh-huh. Anthony Lynn has that role. But regardless, so Bobby Johnson gets run out of New York last year. The Giants' offensive line was bad, but they had an incredible amount of injuries. Yeah. They were just really, really beat up the whole season. And DQ hires Bobby Johnson. And kind of similarly to the DQ hire, a lot of fans were like, oh, man, you know, the Giants fired him. That Giants whole line was terrible. How can you hire this dude? And his reputation, just from people I knew around the league, was really different than what the results were last year in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Going into yesterday's game, the Giants lead the NFL in sacks.
Yep.
Number one team in sacks. Dexter Lawrence leads the NFL individually in sacks.
Yeah.
Washington went up there, allowed zero sacks the entire game.
Yeah.
And ran for about 150 rush yards with Brian Robinson hurt.
Yeah.
The offensive line balled out. At one point, Nick Allegretti had to pop Brandon Coleman's pinky finger back in.
Yeah, I was watching that.
and Coleman going up against Brian Burns for much of the game,
yeah,
a rookie coming off a concussion, was nails. He was really good.
Hey, bro. Coleman can play, dog.
Yeah, like, the Jaden Daniels pick is such a smash, right? That deserves all the credit. If you figure out left tackle going forward with a third-round pick, I mean, that is just massively important.
Oh, yeah. Totally, totally. Listen, man, Brandon Coleman has played way better than a rookie left tackle would be playing. And he was a guy that was drafted that people questioned. You know what I mean? But the dude has been the number play very good football every time he's out there. I look at him in the mindset of, I saw one play where he just took the guy and just slung him out the way, you know. But it all starts in the middle with Biotich. That dude has, if you look at his career against Dexter Lawrence, Dexter don't do a lot against him. Those guys have
throughout
grown
his career.
They've grown to a point now where they can care less about what people say. They just go out and produce. They don't care.
I think the performance last night was just so, I guess it was yesterday. We had to get used to that also, just a regular 1 o'clock game again.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands is like a vertical stadium, and you have the sun going down at 5:30 now or whatever. It felt like it was 9 o'clock at night when we were getting out of there, and it was 6:15 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I just think you've got to look at a team that protects the football first and foremost. They ran the ball really well yesterday. And then what Jaden does is just remarkable.
On people.
I mean, Jaden was 15 to 22 for 200 yards, two touchdowns. McLaurin has two touchdowns on two catches.
Two catches.
The back shoulder corner of the end zone just before halftime throw was phenomenal. You could put that throw, that specific throw, up against any quarterback in the NFL.
I think that throw was phenomenal. I think the one that was better than that was the one to
Noah Brown.
Noah Brown.
Yeah.
Because Noah is running. He has the guy over the top. The guy has inside leverage. He threw the ball to Noah's back shoulder. And when Noah turned, the dude just kept running. It's like the placement of his balls have been terrific. And that is something that most young guys don't understand. You remember when I kept saying he throws to a person, not to a spot.
Sure.
And Jaden throws to spots, not necessarily to the people.
Totally.
The ball that Terry caught, the guy never saw the ball. I guarantee he heard it because it went right by his ear. He probably heard it. And Terry played it off so cool. He was just going in, and then all of a sudden he put his hands up very late. Because what they teach the defensive backs is when the hand goes up, that's when your hand go up and you start to turn. He didn't have a chance because when Terry looked, the ball was hitting him in the chest.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That throw was just so damn good. And what's remarkable about Jaden is he's just so under control all the time.
Yeah.
There's very little wasted movement, wasted motion. He just has such a command. You could tell his understanding of conceptually what the offense is just phenomenal. And then his reactions in the moment are just phenomenal. Yeah. And I think, dude, specific to New York, that Giants team isn't bad. They have some talent. I would argue, though, at some point, if you're undisciplined and you make mistakes at key junctures, that's on coaching. And you just see it over and over again. The Giants started chasing points early with the two-point conversions. Every analytical person that wants to come at me and tell me how dumb I am, that's fine. The Giants are god-awful at two-point conversions. Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, you should update your analytics to show that. The two-point try they made against the Steelers was laughable. It was swinging gate 3.0. And then the two attempted two-point conversions yesterday, I don't know if it's that he gets uncomfortable in those scenarios. Jones just looks nervous, pervous in every two-point conversion situation.
Yeah.
And it just...
He panics.
It's just unbelievable. And
the one thing I know is this. When you're going for the one where he got sacked, you don't take a sack.
No.
The ball has to go to the end zone. If they pick it out, whatever. But you don't take a sack in that situation. That ball has to go to the end zone. You are now in life or death situation. You throw the ball into the
especially
damn end zone.
Especially late in the game, yeah, when you're chasing points anyway.
If they don't get the 2 points, the game over any damn way right there.
There were a lot of people. Yo, you know who had a rough day yesterday is Vegas, because almost every big favorite won. And the highest bet ticket yesterday, both money and tickets, was the Commanders laying the 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
If Daboll just kicks either of those, both of those, that number looks a lot different in the Giants cover.
Yeah.
So good for him for not caring, clearly. But the Giants have talent, and I feel like they often have a good offensive scheme, but Daniel Jones just lets them down.
Yeah,
At halftime, I think he had 0 yards passing.
He had 0 yards passing, but he was cooking running. And I'll say this. They were running the ball very effectively.
Totally.
Their whole scheme is flawed. And they have players on their team who plays, they have front runners. Like, when you want to build a team, if your guys are the type of guy where I'm going to give you what I have no matter if we're winning or losing, you can win a lot of games. But if you have guys that shut it down once it's not happening, you're not going to win a lot. And that's why I think the Giants have a lot of lows. Listen, I like Malik Nabers. But all of a sudden, they just start throwing him dump-off passes. Dump.
Tyrone Tracy.
Yeah, Tyrone Tracy can play. But the thing of it is, they wanted to make sure that they satisfied Malik and started throwing him multiple passes. If I'm a defense and we're leading, you could keep throwing him 4 and 5 yard passes. We're going to just keep tackling his ass.
Right.
You know? And that's what I saw. They stopped trying to go down the field and do stuff until they were forced to do it.
Their first half game plan was so run heavy that you can argue they saw some sort of flaw in Washington's run defense, or just that they fear Daniel Jones having to win for them, so they just wanted to run the ball. The pace, dude, we hit the 2-minute warning in the 1 o'clock hour. Like, I just happened to be noticing those kinds of things. And of their playlist, maybe I'll try to find the game book, but at halftime, Jones maybe had, what, 7 passes?
Not a lot.
He did have the touchdown throw. It was, I think that was about their problems at left tackle, because as soon, the first drive, they were cooking. And then they try to play action pass. Fowler gets home, strip sack, force fumble.
That was a touchdown. My man Bobby Wagner had him a touchdown. The referee screwed it up.
That whole situation sucked because there were Giants players that just stopped going after the ball, too.
That's their fault.
I don't know how you ruled that an incomplete pass
in
real time.
They say play to the end of the whistle.
They scored anyway. If they don't get the – if Jaden doesn't connect with Terry there for the score.
I just want Bobby to get it. Right. I like old dudes having success.
I get that. I thought Jeremy Chinn yesterday was unbelievable. And if you go back in time for him, he was – when in 2020, when there was a lot of talk about Chase Young, who eventually won the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year,
Chinn, I believe,
came in second.
Yeah, yeah.
He was fantastic. And I believe in Carolina, like, he got Carolina'd, and things just went so weird and sideways with that organization. Mm-hmm. Chinn has a lot of talent, and B, for his size and speed, that is hard to figure out.
Something they did yesterday. And we watched them working on it before in pregame. They were working on that tackling one-on-one with guys in space on the edge, because that's where Malik Nabers got him with in the last game. And Samuel Steele, Igbinoghene, those guys were coming up tackling one-on-one. Chinn, they were coming up making those tackles.
Most impressive tackle
and
yesterday.
Nullifying them.
Malik Nabers all alone on the edge on another one of those little dump-offs, and it's Chinn in space, having to come up strong to force the edge, and he's able to get him down, open space.
Yes.
I mean, he shows the speed. He shows the tackling ability. Damn impressive.
Oh, yeah.
On one of the most elusive, hard-to-bring-down guys in the NFL.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with Chinn. I thought Wagner played well. Dante Fowler, we need to have a conversation about Fowler.
Whenever Fowler gets one-on-one on somebody, if it's a suspect tackle, for sure, he's beating them. But he's giving people hell on the edges.
So Fowler's best NFL season came in 2019 for the Rams. It's his only double-digit sack season. He had 11.5 sacks, 58 tackles, forced 2 fumbles that year. He's now at 6.5 sacks on the year through 9 games, 20 tackles, 8 TFLs. He's got the pick 6. Yesterday he forced the fumble. It's funny, throughout the kind of roster process at training camp and everything, you and I talked about it at various times. Like, it's weird they list him as a linebacker. He's a DN. He is a little bit more than a DN. Like, he can give you a little bit of coverage help. But all this talk of where will the production come from, it's remarkable. You lose John Allen a couple weeks ago. You lose Brian Robinson in this game. And the ball just keeps rolling.
Yeah.
You got to credit. That's an organizational.
They have a next man up mentality, and that's going to always work for you.
And they coach 1-53, too. That's something you've always discussed. It's pretty damn interesting what's going on with this football team. And we can back off discussions, but, you know, they're playing really well. And at some point, it's a legitimate. It's a very legitimate conversation about what they can be. Mm-hmm. And these next two games are going to go a long, long way.
Yep.
this is fun, man. It was fun being in that locker room. Yep. I mean, dude, Jeremy Reeves is shouting you out on Twitter, just saying how proud he is. I'm going to read it. Reeves last night, no lie, ending these games and dapping up, seeing how happy Santana, Fletch, and B. Mitch are is so dope. The OGs are proud. Like, that's got to mean something for you.
Hell yeah. You know, it's like, it's been a long time where it was always, they pit the veteran or former players against the current players. That is no longer.
Sure.
Everybody's in this thing together. And you have a chance to talk with them and, you know, break bread in a sense. And also, you show them how happy you are. And, you know, I think that's how you build legacies.
Well, on Saturday night, we kind of saw some guys at dinner.
That works, baby. Yeah. Works.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.